So the second verses of Microscope. Lead by this pure thought, mindfulness, alertness, and great cautious arises. The root of the teaching is keeping the Pradhamoksha vows. Please bless me to accomplish this essential practice. So by reflecting, contemplating on the nature of samsara, by nature of the samsara, by understanding that through that reflection, contemplation, understanding, as long as we are under the influence of delusion and karma, there is no true happiness, peace, happiness, satisfactions, calm, peaceful, then cultivating a strong wish to free from that samsaric state and to achieve liberation, nirvana. So driven by such a wish or thought, pure wish and thought to free from the samsara, then one has to engage in the practice of Tirihaya training as a way to, in order to, as a way to reach the nirvana. The Tirihaya trainings, the higher training of wisdom, the higher training of concentration, and the higher training of ethical morality, or self-discipline, whatever you call it, sultim. So, in order to free from the being born in a samsaric state again and again, we have to stop the karma, the contaminated karma actions which throw us in this samsaric state. In order to stop that contaminated action or karma, then we have to stop the delusion, the afflictive emotions, which are the factors which influence us to create those contaminated action and karma. In order to stop those delusions, then we have to stop the very root of those delusions, the ignorance. And in order to overcome that ignorance, then we need to have the wisdom, understanding the reality, the ultimate nature of phenomena, emptiness. So without that wisdom, then of course we cannot, without the antidote of that wisdom, we cannot overcome the ignorance. And if we cannot overcome the ignorance, then we will not be able to overcome the other delusion which come out of that ignorance. And without that, then we cannot stop the creating the contaminated actions or karma. Without stopping that, without having able to stop the karma or contaminated action, then we cannot stop being reborn in the samsara and go through the suffering and pain again and again. So then definitely we need to have that wisdom and training to have that wisdom, cultivate that wisdom. And in order to have that special insight of the wisdom, then we need to have shamatha, the concentration, the calm abiding. Without the tools of concentration and shamatha, one will not be able to have special insight. And without the foundations of the morality, then one cannot have the shamatha, karma abiding, single pointed concentrations. So each practice helps the higher practice, the foundation with the with the good foundations of the morality, then it will be much more easier to have the realization of concentration, kama, abhyanga, shamatha. And when we have that concentration, single-pointed concentration, shamatha or kama abiding, then we will be able to have the special insight. The wisdom of special insight. So therefore, keeping this morality pure is the very foundations, very root of all this practice, and is the foundation to reach the liberations. And so here, Pratimoksha vows is what is referring to the practice of morality. The 8 Pratimoksha vows, 5 of them for ordained and 3 of Pratimoksha vows for lay practitioners. So those 8 Pratimoksha vows, keeping them one way of understanding is like one way of understanding is the practice of morality. If we can practice the morality purely, if we are able to keep our precept commitment purely, if we are able to practice the 10 virtuous actions and referring 10 non-virtuous actions purely as much as possible, then we will have less distractions. The whole practice of keeping morality or precept is to help us to have less distractions. Especially with our speech and mind, body. And so it helps us to overcome the gross distractions, more gross distractions, especially the distraction which is created through our speech and our physical actions. So when we become good at that, then it helps us to have the concentration shamatha easier, because with that foundation, we already have less gross distractions. Because in order to have the calm abiding shamatha, we need to overcome gross and subtle distractions as well as laxity or dullness. So of course, in order to overcome the subtle distractions or excitement, first we have to overcome the gross distraction excitement. And that is done through the practice of morality. So when we practice morality purely, then we build up much more better environment to have more calm, more peaceful environment with that practice, and less distractions, less gross distraction. And then on the foundation of that, then when we train in the shamatha or kama abiding concentrations, then not only we overcome the gross excitement and distraction, then we try to also overcome the subtle distractions, and especially the mental distractions. And within the mental distractions, of course, there can be gross, subtle, more subtle, and dealing with that, and also laxity, gross, subtle, and more subtle laxity. So overcoming each of those gross and subtle and more subtle, and then being able to find the right concentrations or shamatha, kama abiding. And then on the basis of that, when we develop that tool of that single-pointed concentrations, then we use that tool in our practice meditation to develop that special insight. And through the cultivation of that special insight, then we cut the very root of samsara, the very root of delusion, the ignorance. So that is how we... So therefore, that practice of morality is a very crucial and foundations. And in order to have, to be able to keep our morality purely, as well as in order to have the experience of kama abiding or shamatha and the wisdom or special insight, we need very powerful tools of mindfulness and alertness. The cautiousness or carefulness. So, if we have this cautiousness or carefulness, then of course we are always careful with our actions, our speech, our mind. So when we are more careful with our thoughts, our words, with our actions, then we are able to keep our morality purely. When we are careless, that is when we break our precept or break the morality. Such carefulness, the quality of that carefulness, comes when there is strong mindfulness and alertness. So therefore we need, the more aware we are of our thoughts, our words, our speech, and our actions, the more, again, we are able to stop from creating negative karma. We are able to stop from breaking the precepts. We are able to stop from the delusions from arising or becoming stronger through the help of the tools of mindfulness and introspections. So mindfulness help us to be aware of the object that which we have ascertained before, and remembering that object and not losing that object of our mindfulness, whatever we are trying to be mindful of, whether it's the thought, whether it's the speech, whether it's the actions, or all of them. So clearly not losing that object and be aware of that all the time. And the introspections, we use time to time to see whether your mind is still aware of the object, whether your mind is still focused on that object, whether your mind is still fixed on that object, or has it wandered somewhere else? Or is it kind of becoming dull? Is it becoming more dull laxity, falling in dull laxity? Or is it becoming too excited, distracted? So we use that alertness from time to time to investigate, to check. And when we notice our mind is not fixed, focused, then we use that introspection or this alertness to bring back our mind to that. So as it is often says, that mindfulness like the rope which tied up our wild elephant mind to the pole of virtuous object. And the introspection or alertness is like the hook. When you train the wild elephant, you use that hook when they are not listening, and when someone is trying to train the elephant, wild elephant, they use that hook to him them to train. Also same, I think, when they train the horse, they use stick kind of to. So similar, that hook, in the introspection's mind, you use that to see whether your mind is there on the object or has it been wandering somewhere else. So therefore is, so by cultivating, by developing the practice of wisdom, concentration, and morality through the tools of mindfulness and alertness or introspections, then we are able to achieve the liberations. Through then we are able to achieve the liberations through this path. By engaging in this practice of three higher training through the strong, by the force of strong mindfulness and introspection or alertness. Then we can achieve the liberation and nirvana. And that is how to achieve liberation and nirvana. As Shantideva said in his Guide to Buddhism Way of Life, even those experts, scholarly experts, even those who have studied very much, even those who have great, they break their morality due to not having mindfulness and alertness. It's not that they don't know. They know it, but because your mind is, you are not mindful of your thoughts, your action and speech, even you have broken one of those precepts of morality, you are not aware. So therefore, it's crucial to be able to keep the precept, the morality pure. And also, in terms of dealing with the delusions, there are three different ways of dealing with the delusions. Three different levels. On one level, you stop the delusions from arising by keeping yourself distant from the object which lead to arising of the delusions, okay? By keeping distant from the object, which lead for the delusion to arises, you keep distant from that object. Therefore, you don't allow that delusion to arises. That is one very basic level for the beginner. That is the practice of morality. The practice of morality is to help us to protect ourselves, keep distant from all the objects which increases our delusions, which leads to arising of our delusions. And that is needed, that step is needed at the very beginning. It's like someone, example, someone who is addicted for whatever the object of addiction is. If you stop them to, it's very difficult them to stop. So when you are trying to, we all are addicted in the delusions, and especially the attachment craving, and not from just this lifetime, from beginner's time. So when we are dealing with that, so it is like rehabilitations. When someone is starting to rehabilitate, you have to take away them, whatever the substance that they are from their away, because they are not strong enough to resist at the moment. So our practice is not strong enough to resist. I know attachment is bad, but the moment I see this object, the object of attachment, I can't stop it. I can't resist it. Therefore, the closer I'm to that object, my attachment comes and increases. So it is skillful means and helpful, like just like rehabilitations. At the very beginning, you take away that object. So there is no object of attachment, so the attachment doesn't arise, doesn't increase. Of course, attachment is there, but it's not manifesting or it's not increasing. It's not the ultimate solution, but it's the solution to start with, to build on. Of course, even someone who, when you are trying to rehabilitate, just taking substance from their away is not the last solution, you know, because when they encounter the substance, again, but that is at the very beginning, in order to build up that, eventually they build up more and more energy to resist it. And as they build up that resistance internally, then once they have built up that, then even they encounter the substance, then they don't become uncontrollable like as before. They can resist, and they can not use same way. That is how it is with the practice. Then we have to go beyond that. Next level of practice is through the practice of karma abiding, shamatha, dealing with the delusions. How we deal with the delusion through the practice of karma abiding, shamatha. In that cases, now you are not actually distending yourself the object. Now you are encountering the object, the substance. Substance. So you are close to the substance, and that attachment might arise. Of course, it will not arise so easily and so strongly as before, because you have that strong practice of morality. With that strong practice of morality, you have already built up that resistance to some extent. Okay, over the time. It's like, So you have already built up some inner strength to resist. So it doesn't come very easily and strongly with someone when you don't have practiced the morality from. But still the delusion arises. So when your delusion arises, then you contemplate on your breath, you focus on your breath or any other image, objects. And through that, when you engage into this practice of karma abiding, shamatha, concentrations, then the delusions, which is starting to arise, subside. Okay? The delusions start to subside. So the delusions still there, but is not manifesting because of you are total in that state of mind, karma abiding, shamatha, concentrations. None of the delusions arises. So now you are going a little bit further step than the first step. Now you are in object with the object of delusions. But because you go in one state of mind, that overwhelms the other state of minds. So the delusion does not manifest, cannot manifest. But of course, the delusions, the garbage is still down deep there. Down deep there, but it's not manifesting. So it's not a big problem at the moment. It is still problem. The cause of problem is there, but it is not making you crazy. It is not making you agitated. So now you have improved. Your practice in dealing with the delusion has increased, improved, compared to the first level. But still, you have not come to the final solution, because the garbage, the delusion are still deep down there. It is not manifesting, but deep down there. Then the third level of practice is dealing with the very root of the delusions through the wisdom, through the special insight. So now you are not only not running away or keeping distance from the object of delusions, but you are not also not kind of in a different state where you are totally kind of, your mind is somewhere else, so you don't, that, now you actually bring the garbage up. Now you steer. You bring the garbage out and then clean it, purify it through the wisdom's eye. Another way of putting it might be this way. The water is already a little bit dirt, and I've been staring, moving, and you can see the dirt. The practice of morality is not allowing more dirt inside. Already, we see already dirt there. The practice of shamatha is then not stirring it, not shaking it, allowing all the dirt to subside, and then to be able to see the clarity of that water, so it doesn't bother. You can see the clarity, but the dirts are still there, down there. The wisdom is like stirring it and bringing it, all the garbage up, and cleansing, purifying it. And that is how we clear the water from the very root of it. Then once you clean by stirring and by putting more water and then bringing those garbage up slowly, slowly, then you clean it, and then there is no dirt even at the bottom of it. Then you clear it from the very root of it, very bottom of it. So that is how we do with the wisdom. So that is why practice, meditation on analytical meditations, which we use for the wisdom, is not suppressing the delusions. Do you get it? A lot of people misunderstand that we are suppressing the delusions. We are not suppressing the delusions. Suppressing doesn't help, because it will explode. It's a matter of time before it will explode, and then it is very bad. So here, with the analytical meditation, we don't suppress. Actually, we bring up all this garbage. We bring up all this garbage and walk with each of them. Walk with each of them, each garbage, each of them, through the tool of the wisdom. And then when we are able to deal with that, then we are able to deal with the delusion from the very root of it. And that is the most advanced, the most highest level of dealing with the delusions. So again, you can see the three practice, three different level of practice, all are in relation with dealing with the delusions at different level. So again, it is not only about self-discipline or more ethical, moral way of life. Do you get it? Nothing to do with delusions. Sometimes we have this misinterpretation about this practice of morality is how you choose to live, in what way. Nothing to do with our negative emotions. Actually, it is a way to deal with our negative emotions at the very beginning level from that perspective. So that is the So even we have achieved liberations, individual liberation, nirvana, still from one perspective, we have not realized our full potential. Still there is more to achieve. Still there is much more to actualize and realize. From your own perspective, even though you are free from samsara, even though you are free from the delusions, even you have no more suffering, pain, still you have not actualized, realized your own full potentials. You have not actualized all the qualities, positive qualities, that you can achieve. Also, you have not overcome all the negativities that which you can overcome, which means the subtle obscurations of the omniscient, the subtle obscurations of to become omniscient, the imprint left by the delusions. The delusions are normal, the imprint is there. So even from your perspective, you have not purified all the negativities. Still there is some negativities. The imprint of the delusions, the obscuration, the subtle obscurations. And then you have not actualized all the positive qualities from your side. Then if we look from other side, from others, when all other sentient beings are suffering, how can you shut your eyes and not not to feel for them, not to feel for them, and just be satisfied with your own liberation and nirvana? That doesn't look good. That doesn't feel good. That doesn't feel right. It's like that. I have everything. Enough to eat, good house, everything. And every day I go here, every direction I go, everyone's so suffering, so much pain. And how can I not feel that? How can I ignore that? How can I close my eyes every time, all the time, which is happening every time? That will not give me a peace. Even from that perspective, then. And then, of course, if we look from another point, from Buddhist point of view, all of them have been our so caring, kind mother, parent, brother, sisters, grandparents, so forth. Not only one time, so many times. And they have done so much, so much. They have been so kind, so caring. Not just one time, countless times, each of them. So how can you ignore your so kind, caring parent when they really need you and totally neglecting, totally ignoring, totally is impossible. From that perspective, again, it's not the right way, it's not the correct way. So when you reflect, contemplate on those issues, the more and more, then you develop a strong wish to not only wish to free yourself from suffering and cause of suffering, but wish to free all sentient beings from suffering and cause of suffering, and lead them to fully enlightened state. And wish to achieve fully enlightened state in order to that. So that is the Bodhisattva's attitude, the Bodhicitta and Mahayana practice, and that is the great scope, the practice of great scope. So the next verses start with the great scope. So first verse is to generate aspirations to cultivate the bodhicitta, which is the basis for the practice of all bodhisattvas, basis of all bodhisattva practices. And second verse is, once you have generated or cultivated the bodhicitta, then engaging into the other bodhisattva practices, such as six perfection and so forth, on the basis of that bodhicitta. So then the first verse is, just as I have fallen into the sea of samsara, so have all mother magnetic beings. Please bless me to see this, training supreme bodhicitta, and bear the responsibility of freeing magnetic beings. So by understanding during the middle scope, by understanding that as long as we are in the ocean of samsara, as long as we are under the influence of delusion karma, there is no peace, true peace, lasting peace, happiness, joy, satisfactions. With that understanding, then now we begin to understand others, just as all other sentient beings, all mother sentient beings, just like ourselves. As long as they are in the ocean or sea of samsara, they have no real happiness, joy, satisfactions. Just as myself, just as I understand with my own experience, just like myself, also, as long as they are under the influence of delusion and karma, there is no real freedom. There is no real freedom at all. So with that understanding, then we begin to understand and feel. And then with that understanding, feeling, then it gives us a natural wish or aspirations to free them from that samsaric state and the cause of that samsara, the delusion karma, and lead them to the happiness, thereby cultivating the bodhicitta attitude. So internal, when we are trying to cultivate the bodhicitta mind, the altruistic intention of bodhicitta, the bodhisattva attitude of the bodhicitta, of course, there are many different technique, meditation method, and two method which is very most common, well-known, the method of the 7 point of cause and effect, the 7 point of cause and effect, following that, which is passed through Buddha Shakyamuni, Maitreya, Asanga, and up to Adisha and so forth. And then another method, which is equalizing and exchanging self with others, which is passed through Buddha Shakyamuni, Manjushri, Shantideva, and Adisha, and so forth. So there are two different major kind of method or technique. When we use the 7 point of meditation, 7 point of cause and effect, of course you start with the. So on. In that, you need to have some understanding of past and future life, many lifetimes, because it's based on recognizing all sentient beings have been your most caring mothers, parents, and so forth, many times. So therefore, there is that you need to have that understanding to use this method as a basis for the to develop, cultivate the practice and cultivate the bodhicitta. I think someone who have a strong understanding, belief in past and future life, and someone who has a really strong connection with their, let's say, their parents, mothers, really good relationship, I think maybe this method will be very effective. For some people, maybe if they don't have that understanding, then of course this method, there is no basis for this method, if they don't have understanding and believe in past and future life. So anyway, but I think those who have, I think this method can be even more powerful. I mean, it depends on individual, again, of course, it all depends on individual, which method is more effective to who and who. So according to this method, first recognizing all sentient beings as your most kind mother or parent. Second point is remembering and recollecting the kindness of their kindness. And then third, on the basis of recollecting, remember the kindness, cultivating wish to repay the kindness. Of course, usually if you remember, recollect the kindness, wish to repay the kindness will come quite naturally. Most cases we don't have the wish to pay the kindness because we don't remember or we forgot or cannot recollect the kindness. So of course, repaying the kindness. And then, on the basis of that, recognizing and remembering, recollecting kindness and wish to repay the kindness, then we have a pleasant, we develop the pleasant appearance of that sentient beings as a mother, kind mother, caring mothers. On the basis of that, then the love, the affection, the love, a strong wish to lead them to happiness and cause of happiness, and to see them in that happiness state and not to be separated from that happiness state, and then the compassion, a state of mind where you want wish, strong wish, intention, will to see, free them from suffering and cause of suffering. And on the basis of that love and compassion, then developing a universal responsibility or special thought, the sixth one, taking responsibility on yourself to free them from suffering and cause of suffering, lead them to happiness and cause of happiness. Not only just wishing them to be there, but taking yourself responsibility to make that happen. So of course I can have one wishing, strong wish to someone to be free from suffering and to have happiness, but not necessarily that I take responsibility to make that happen. So this special thought or universal responsibility is taking the responsibility by oneself to make that happen. And then when you have that universal responsibility, you take that universal responsibility, truly want to free them from suffering, cause of suffering, lead them happy. And when you actually try to do that, engage in doing that, then you find yourself in a lot of limitations, how much you can do and how much, as we have some experience of that. Even when you have the right motivations, we cannot really help sometimes in actual. And sometimes even you have the right skill, when they are not ready, again, it's difficult. So we often find, so then, especially when we ourselves are under the influence of delusions and karma, then it's very difficult to really free them from samsara and the delusions. So when we have that, when you try to apply that universal responsibility into the actions, then we find ourselves in the situations where we are limited at the moment, the way, with the state that we are in at the moment. Then you begin to think whether there is a state where it can be limitless without the limitation that we have, where you can achieve a state where there is no limitation in how much you can help and benefit others. As you contemplate and think more about that, and as you contemplate and think about the what Buddha is, what enlightened being is, what fully awakened being is, the more you contemplate on that, the more you study, the more you reflect, think of, then you begin to see, oh, that is the only state where you can reach that state where there is no limitation. And then you develop a strong wish to achieve that state because you truly want to free them from suffering cause of, and lead them to happiness, cause of happiness. And you see that you can do that in the most beneficial way, most effective way, most skillful way, without any limitation, only when you achieve that state, the fully awakened state, fully enlightened state. And naturally, you develop a strong wish to achieve that fully enlightened state in order to free them from suffering and lead them to happiness. And when we develop that state, that is the bodhicitta, the seventh, the result. So that is why it is called 7 points of cause and effect. The first six are cause, and the seventh one is the result. I think I can take one or two questions. We have 5 minutes. So, yeah, if there is.
Thank you, Geshe-la. This is about you. There's a couple of questions really about the process for removing delusions. You gave us three methods. And one is, I think I know the answer, but sometimes it's hard to know what I'm attached to, because particularly in daily life where you're trying to do all these different things and you get agitated, it's hard to actually work out where the problem is, like it seems to be outside. So for example, if I'm struggling with a work problem, I think it's because I'm trying to get something in at the right time, and yet I cause myself all this agitation, and then I get angry, and that spills out onto other people. So do you have any advice of how you can work out what the problem is to deal with it, particularly through dealing with it through emptiness?
I think not only with this problem, I think with everything. I think, again, normally we somehow, most time as we feel the cause of our whatever problem is outside and not something inside. And to be able to understand and see that, I think we need a lot of time, a lot of practice, to really go deep inside ourselves, find a time to look inside, you know. Time and find to go deep inside and really going much more deeper level, much more to see, is it really something external or it is something internal as it's coming. So I think unless we have some understanding by looking deep inside and coming from within ourselves to that understanding, I think still it will be very superficial of that understanding. I think our understanding at the moment is quite superficial. We think it is from inside, but at the same time, we also feel it is outside, and most time it is outside. So still we are not 100% convinced that it is coming from inside. And because I think we haven't gone inside deep enough to understand that. So I think that is, finding really the time or the place or whatever, the environment, to be able to look deep inside and to be able to go deeper and deeper to find that. So once we have depth understanding from the depth of our heart of that, then I think it will be much easier. Every time we're in a problem, then we understand that it's coming from inside, and then immediately we try to look inside instead of trying to look outside. And immediately we try to fix the problem by looking inside, and how can I fix it from looking inside instead of how can I fix by changing something externally. So I think to reach that point where immediately when a problem, immediately trying to see it inside and trying to fix from inside, I think first we need to understand from that all the problems coming from that, from inside, the principal cause of that. So I think that is, and I think Lama Yeshe used to advise, I think it's very important. He used to advise his students to find a time every year for retreat, your own retreat, either group or solitary by yourself, depending on. Even if it's just 1 week, find a time to do, reconnect yourself inside. Otherwise, when we don't find time to look inside and reconnect, again, we get forget and we get more and more distant from that understanding or that feeling. So it is important to find that kind of, even we can't find a lot of time, and maybe best environment, at least trying to find some kind of environment, some time, at least a week to, and I think that is, very important, crucial, I think. Mm. sometimes, unless we have those understanding, sometimes it is very hard to have to. Most of the technique, contemplations, meditations, when that understanding doesn't come from depth, then sometimes those method doesn't seem to connect in us. Even if we apply it, it somehow just doesn't kind of really connect, or just really doesn't make much difference sometimes. And because, again, I think because of still our practice, whatever practice we are trying doing, I think still very much on superficial, artificial level, and very much on the surface, not being done from the depth. And I think that is one of the things, I think that is the one of the thing. So of course, in terms of the when we apply the concept of emptiness in those situations, of course, for example, if agitating state is there or angry is there, just looking into that state of the mind itself. What is that which I'm so agitated? What is that emotions? What is that emotion, angry, that which I'm so feeling so intense, strong? What is that? What is that emotion? Where is that? Can I locate, pinpoint that emotions within any part of my body, within any part of the mental continuum? Does it has shape, color, size? If it doesn't have shape, color, size, what is that? Is it the clarity? Is it the continuum? Is the continuum the angry? That is it, that's just the continuum? Is it just the clarity? Is it just the awareness? What is it? What is really it? What really it is? Trying to go deeper to find, pinpoint, seeing if we can pinpoint and see that. And if we are able to do that with a quite good concentration, and if we are able to bring all energy in trying to analyze and from that pinpoint, then the intensity immediately kind of decreases. Before it feels so concrete, so solid, you really feel it. Even your body can feel it. The sensations, physical sensations, due to that mental negative energy that you can feel within your body sensations, and it is so strong, so intense. But once you started to investigate, analyze in that way, it becomes more unclear and unclear. Before it seems it is so tangible, that emotions is so tangible, something so concrete, something so solid. But then when you go deep and try to understand that, the way what I'm feeling, then it becomes less and less tangible, less and less tangible, less and less clear. And by doing that, then your grasping is become weakened. When you feel more tangible, more solid, more, then we seem to grasp, we seem to cling, we seem to hold it more tightly. Then that becomes even more tense, intense. But then when we can analyze that way, then as it becomes less tangible, less solid, less concrete, then there's no basis to hold. There's no basis to cling. There's no basis to, and then as you begin to loosen up that basis for clinging, holding so tightly, then that the sense of emotions or the mind which is grasping, holding also dissolve slowly, and then you feel less and less of that emotions. So I think that is one way of doing it, looking at the emotion itself in that perspective, or looking at the same way of doing to the same, the situation itself. The situation itself, the object which give arise to that emotions, whatever that situation or something object, looking at the same object, the object of my attachment, the object of my anger, the object of my agitations, what is that? Again, doing some kind of similar process of finding, investigating, analyzing it. Again, before you feel so tightly, so strongly, that object there, somewhere there, and as we then again it loosen up, it becomes less and less tangible, less concrete, and that, and again it has similar effect. So we can use same analysis to the object, the emotion itself, the actions or the situations between the object and the subjects. And oneself, the self itself. So that I think that is one way of utilizing contemplation, reflection, meditation, or emptiness in that kind of situations. Another way of doing similar is that even though it feels so real, the emotion itself, the object of the emotions, the object which lead to that emotions, the situation itself, really so real, but reminding ourselves, even though it looks so real, so concrete, so solid to us, it's not like that. It's our mind, our own mind creating that. It's more like illusion state, more like dream state. There's nothing external physical in that, but our mind is creating that. Of course, there is something, some basis, physical basis. On the basis of some physical things or some situation or some energies, our mind label it something and then create this new phenomena on the basis of something there. And so there is some basis for our mind to create, but the actual things that we feel so real and which we are agitated because of that, or the emotion itself, is our own mind creations. Knowing that, reminding ourselves, and then it is more like, so the more we are able to remind ourselves that, is more of that, then again, the clinging again become more and more, less tightening, less and less holding tightly, and become more and more. So I think these are a few of the things that we can utilize. Okay. Chanjo semjo rinpo che mage pa nang ke kyo che kya wa nyam pa me pa ya kong le kong to pe wa shu. Thank you. Oh, yeah. Oma, Oma, Oma. To the precious Buddha, peerless guide. To the precious Dharma, peerless refuge. To the precious Sangha, peerless liberator. We offer to the three jewels of the refuge. This food with 100 flavors, attractive and well prepared, is offered to the Buddhas and with devotions. May all beings enjoy the wealth of food of concentration. Seeing this food as medicine, we eat it without attachment or hatred, not out of avarice, pride, or the wish for an inevitable body, only to sustain the body.